Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Listening live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and bring you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Here at you live on a Saturday night, October the 29th, 2016. I'm Dre, he's Jay, and we would like to welcome everybody to our spooky Halloween podcast in much less detail. We will break down the spookiest and the scariest games in Week 8 in the National Football League. We will give those spooky worst games the highlight advantage, the full treatment, so to speak. And Jason, before we get to those, actually, we start off with a very, very spooky game that would have fit perfectly in our highlight packages if we had only picked it tonight instead of in our previous show, and that would be the Jaguars and the Titans, and we will both be glad to take the victory as we both had the Titans to cover 3.5, and they covered very easily, and I'm assuming that you, like me, like I, did not watch 1 second of that game.
Well, no, I take you would be incorrect because I was working on Thursday night, and you know, I was working until 8 p.m., so the game started and kicked off at about 20:25 after 7. So I watched most of the first quarter and saw about what I needed to see out of the Jaguars offense to know that we were perfectly fine in our pick. I mean, that was about as inept as you can get offensively for a football team. I mean, Blake Bortles just missing dudes. He was doing his best Brock Osweiler impersonation out there.
Oh, that's not good.
No, although I don't think that the Jags fans have started the GoFundMe account yet to buy out his contract like they did in Houston for Brock Osweiler. Well, I don't know if you saw about that one.
I saw that in passing. What is Blake Bortles making? Is he up to $72 million, or are they not paying him? I don't think they're paying him quite the way that Brock Osweiler is getting paid. No.
He wishes he was up to that because he's playing at about that level right now. That and then of course the Jags end up firing their offensive coordinator. You know, because they're
that's the magic solution.
Yeah, apparently the statistically though, but no, apparently what you're supposed to do is fire the other side of the ball's coach and like do the swerve. You know, kind of like what the Bills did.
Well, that's what Buffalo did, right? Their defense gave swerve. Up 700 points. So they fired the OC the next couple days later.
And then they rattled off 4 in a row.
Right. But no, that's the move in the AFC now is get in trouble, fire the OC. That's the third offensive coordinator has been fired this year. They're all in the AFC. There's something going on the East Coast in the AFC. Baltimore, Buffalo, and now Jacksonville. Just kill the OC and try to save your own hide. And I don't think it's going to make much of a difference in Jacksonville.
Yeah. And Tennessee played well, but they were also playing against the Jaguars. Right. That game was a total blowout, even though the Jaguars started stuffing the stat sheet in the latter half of the fourth quarter, which only basically mattered for fantasy purposes. You know, we look up and Blake Bortles. Blake Bortles played a garbage game for 3.5 quarters and then basically put up some meaningless stats in the back end of the fourth quarter. And Tennessee looked pretty good again. You know, that division's so just awful that it could be the Titans. I think we know who it won't be. It won't be the Jaguars.
It won't be the Jaguars.
won't be the Jags.
Sure. Those other three teams may all finish like 6-10, 7-9. It might be between all of them. I could see that easily. They're all like equally just not quality football. Yeah,
if we get the 7-9 division winner out of the AFC South, I believe I had that one.
I believe you did. And you would have picked a good one there because, boy, that division. Oh. All right, I can't add anything to the breakdown because I literally saw none of that game. And the only thing I can say is it's complete 100% hindsight because I didn't say it on the show when we were picking the game, which was I really thought Derrick Henry would get some run and get a chance to get some action in this game because the Titans had used DeMarco Murray so heavily in the game Sunday to come back 3 days later and go complete heavy on him again. I thought Derrick Henry was definitely going to get some time and maybe even split the snaps. And sure enough, he got some time and he got a chance and he showed a little bit of what he's got. But again, it's really hard to evaluate anything the Titans did because once again, they were playing the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah. Yeah, an easy win. Nice, easy Thursday night win. But, you know, but it would, you can't start a week better than, you know, with a drama-free, nice, easy. Neither one of us locked it down, which we both probably could have. But
it would have been inspired.
We didn't have the foresight to do that.
No. Oh, well. It's still a good way to start off the week with a couple of wins. There's no doubt about that. Getting to our spooky picks after I let all of you know that you are listening to blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail. That's the only place you can hear our creepy, spooky picks this week and the only place you can listen live. Plenty of places to listen after the show is over. Our podcast packages up this live show and an after show after that. And to get all of that, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can subscribe on many different podcast apps, including TuneIn, Mixcloud, Blubbery, Player.fm, and whatever others may be out there. Just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast on any of those apps and subscribe. You can always send us an email, and you would send that to inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. I am on Twitter at IMLDDre. Jason is on Twitter at IMLDJTG. And all of our picks are always up on the blog, including these picks for week 8 that are coming up. Those picks will go up, I'd say, about an hour after the live show goes off the air. And to find our blog site, you just go to inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. You can always find all of our picks going all the way back to when we started the blog in 2010. If you want to check out all of our picks against the spread, and we're both flying over 500, well, we were over 500 for the season before Jason fell back a little bit last week. But generally, through the years, you'll find us flying way over 500, sometimes a little bit over 500, but in general, trending over 500 for full seasons. That's what we do around here. We've been picking games for many, many years and having fun doing it. I didn't look up the website ronjaworski.com, but that's another guy that I guess picks every game against the spread, so I'm actually going to have to check that out. If I remember to check it out after the show, I will do so. Because I don't know. It might be one of those things you have to pay to see all of his picks. I have no idea. I've never gone to the site, so I don't know. But he was on the Tony Kornheiser show and was talking about how he does have every pick against the spread up on his website. So I have to check that out. So that might be a new source to compare our picks against every week. So we'll see how that works out. In any event,
as long as he doesn't pick the winners after the game.
That would not be cool. That is not the way to do it. No, I'm pretty sure he doesn't do that, but we'll find out. So on to our spooky, creepy picks. We're breaking down the worst of week 8 in the NFL because of our Halloween holiday coming up on Monday. This is the tradition around here for IMLD. We break down the worst during holiday weekend just to give a little shine to those spooky, scary teams that we're not going to talk damn near anything about after this week as the season passes the halfway point. So on to the highlight games for week 8. The spooky, scary picks. to break down for the highlight game. We're going to start off with the worst. We're not going to beat around the bush. We're going to go right to the fucking worst game of the week, the toilet bowl of all games. Ryan Fitzpatrick and the New York Jets versus quarterback du jour, quarterback of the week for the Browns. I guess it's going to be Jake McClown. I guess he's coming back from injury and is going to start for the Cleveland Browns. The winless 0-7 Cleveland Browns, the only winless team left in the NFL, hosting a 2-5 New York Jets team that tried to throw Ryan Fitzpatrick, its starting quarterback, overboard and put all the problems on him. And that exile lasted for about a half a football before the replacement, oh God, Geno Smith, broke his knee and tore his knee up and is now out for the rest of the year. So Ryan Fitzpatrick is back, and he sounds so happy to be back. He actually said that his owner and his GM and his coach doesn't trust him, but he's back in there anyway. He actually said that out loud. I don't know if I've ever heard a quarterback say that. The starting quarterback talk about how everybody in the organization doesn't trust him. So a fitting way to start off our spooky picks with the Jets and the Browns, two teams I don't know we're going to be talking much about the rest of the year at all. 2-5 New York gives two. The Jets are a 2-point favorite at 0-7 Cleveland. Jason, who you got?
Well, it's actually, I think it's good news for Cleveland that Josh McClown, Jake McCrown, is actually back under center for them. The most competent football that the Browns played all year was that first half that McClown played against Baltimore, where they actually jumped out to a, it was like 20-0 or 20-3 lead. And then, of course, he got hurt, and the Ravens were able to sort of claw their way back into that game because the Browns, I believe that was the beginning of Cody Kessler. We don't need to see any more.
That's
Cody
a third
Kessler.
Third backup or the fourth, I forget. Yeah,
we don't need to see Hogan, whoever that guy is, who was absolutely brutal in spot duty last week after Kessler got hurt. So McClown actually playing for them, I believe, helps them. He's the most competent quarterback on that roster. If he's able to stay healthy, I believe that this could be the one. We keep waiting to see which one could be the one for Cleveland. Is this the one? I believe if Josh McClown, Jake McCrown, Cade McNown stays healthy the whole game, we will actually see Cleveland get their first and probably only win against the complete head case that has become the New York Jets and the Ryan Fitzpatrick saga, who basically lost his job to Geno Smith. Oh God, Geno Smith. And of course, the Geno Smith pulls a Geno Smith and promptly gets injured, and now he's out. And so he's just done. And then Ryan Fitzpatrick sort of unceremoniously gets handed the reins back to the team and does not sound too enamored with the franchise that he is quarterbacking. And you've pointed this out for two shows in a row now about Ryan Fitzpatrick and basically going to the press, getting into these press conferences and talking about how it's basically him against the world and nobody believes in him and is certainly not his franchise. And now he's got to go out there and try to produce wins for this Jets team. He's already operating under the assumption that, one, he's been playing terrible. I mean, he had that game that, you can say that they're throwing him under the bus, but he had that game where the Jets had 8 turnovers and they left him in. They didn't even pull him in that game. So obviously they can't hate him that bad because you don't let a guy throw 6 picks and be responsible for running an offense that turns the ball over 8 times. And still they figured you were the best chance to win football games for them. I don't know how he could possibly say that nobody believes in him. I mean, what else was he supposed to do, to lose that job? Because he should have lost that job a lot sooner than he did. But of course, he's like, oh, poor me, poor Ryan Fitzpatrick. They don't believe in me. Well, that's
great. You could look at it another way. You could say if they don't bench him after that, then when would they ever bench him? So that's another way to look at that.
Well, I don't believe in you either there, Ryan. I'm taking the Browns and Jake McCrown to win the game and get their one. The Jets are a mess.
You know, the last time I thought a team just had to get one to avoid going winless was the Detroit Lions, and they never got that one, did they? They never got it. And another comparison to that winless Lions team is ESPN's Pixie and Pick'em pointed out that there's only one other team in history to have six guys throw a pass in the first seven games of their season, and that's the 1976 inaugural season Tampa Bay Buccaneers, back when they only played 14 games in an NFL season, and those Bucs went 0-14. The Browns don't have to get a win. They're not entitled to a win. God does not bestow a win upon the Cleveland Browns automatically this year. Somewhere along the way, they're going to have to stitch a quarterback together, a whole quarterback out of all these different parts, and they're going to have to earn a win over somebody somewhere along the way. Will it be against butthurt Ryan Fitzpatrick getting ready for his Taylor Swift collabo? That's the only reason I brought it up two shows in a row. This is unprecedented to me. There's plenty of butthurt diva athletes out there. There's dozens of them to choose from that say crazy things. I've never heard anything quite like that, to just basically blowtorch everybody in his locker room and talk about how they don't believe in him, but he's going to play for him anyway as if he's doing them a favor, and then have to turn back around and go back into that locker room. I would love to know what that's been like this week. I'd love to know what that week of practice was like for the New York Jets with that guy as supposedly the team leader. Terrell Pryor, clearly the best athlete on the Browns this year, clearly the best playmaker that they've had. Had some hamstring issues and was hobbling around, but it appears from what I've been reading that he's going to be okay. Not on the injury report. He's going to make it out there on the field for the Browns. Jake McCrown will actually have a weapon in Terrell Pryor. That made all the difference for me. I was prepared to pick against the Brownies once again and send them to 0-8, even though butthurt Ryan Fitzpatrick was going out there. Terrell Pryor is the difference for me. I'm with you. I'm going to take the Browns to win the game. I concur. But if Pryor wasn't going to play, who else would make plays for this Browns team right now if he wasn't out there? I understand that Jake McCrown might be the most accomplished actual quarterback or the closest thing to a professional quarterback on that roster. But I don't know who the heck he would throw to if Terrell Pryor couldn't take the field. So at least they got that. At least they got Terrell Pryor, and maybe he'll run past Darrell Revis and urinate on Revis Island just one time. It might only take one time, the way Ryan Fitzpatrick is capable of playing or not playing, as it turns out sometimes. It might be all they get, but it might be all they need in a low-scoring affair. I love the under, and I like the Browns to win the game. I am with you on that one.
Oh, wow. Stunning. You gave me the swerve there, because I totally, the way you started that pick, I did not expect you to take Cleveland at all.
Neither did I. Our second spooky highlight game takes us to Charlotte, North Carolina. Wait, is this wrong? Did I get the Cardinals and the Panthers? This is the rematch of the NFC title game last year, right? This can't be a spooky game. These are two solid teams. These are two of the best teams in the NFC, right? This can't be spooky and scary. The Panthers are 1-5, and they're giving up 8.6 yards per pass attempt, and they're just getting torched. Cam Newton gets concussed and comes back and knocked out again. You don't know when he's going to be able to stay on the field. He bounces back and forth. There's no consistency. There's nothing about this team right now that suggests that they're going to ever come close to that Panthers team that we saw last year that had all the mojo and had everything working in their favor. And this year it seems like everything is working against the Panthers, just the exact opposite of what they did last year. Arizona, for their part, are a hard-earned 3-3-1, that one tie from last week, but they don't look the same either. They may not be under 500, but they definitely do not look like the Cardinals team that we lauded and praised from last season. I think the biggest difference, I'm sure you would agree with this, is that offense that we praised as being so fearless last year. They threw deep on your ass and they didn't care. And when you got tired of running down their receivers, then they'd hand it to their running back, David Johnson, and he'd smash you in the fucking mouth. And they didn't have any qualms about doing anything on offense. They'd call any play, any time. And they don't look anything like that offense at all this year. They're running fine. David Johnson is still very good out of the backfield. But the passing game doesn't look anything like last year. So this has turned from what would be a highlight game last year if this were to take place last regular season into now a spooky highlight game because these teams are not playing very well. The Arizona defense put on a nice little show last week against the Seattle Seahawks in that 6-6 tie, but the offense definitely does not look the same, and Carolina's team overall doesn't look the same. So that's what we've come down to for the Cardinals and the Panthers. As far as the point spread goes, Carolina is still getting some love. I'm suspecting it's because they're coming off a bye and because they're desperate, people think they're going to rise up and have the type of performance that they've been waiting for all season. So Carolina, even though they're only 1-5, is actually the cop-out line 3-point home favorite against the 3-3-1 Arizona Cardinals. Despite that somewhat odd line, I'm actually going to agree with the bettors. I'm going to take Carolina and give the 3 as well. I'm not convinced. We remember that game, that conference title game where Carson Palmer played like crap, and we kind of wondered why. Carolina had a great defense, so you have to give them the credit first of all. But at the same time, the Cardinals' offense didn't look the same, didn't look at all like they had looked in the regular season. We tried to ascribe that to an injury to Carson Palmer's hand. We tried to say that obviously he was hurt and he wasn't 100%, and that had a big role to play in it. Well, all season long, he hasn't looked any better than he looked in that conference title game last year. So I'm not convinced he's any healthier than he was when he got his ass kicked by the Panthers in the NFC title game. So I'm going to pick him to get his ass kicked again. Why not? He looks like crap. I understand that Carolina D is nowhere near what it was last season. But Arizona's offense has been looking kind of oy. They got two of their speedy receivers, Michael Floyd and John Brown, both have hamstring injuries. I think they're both supposed to play, but they both are not going to be at top speed, it looks like. They might be hobbling around out there, so I don't think that's going to work out very well for them. Does Arizona have anything left? Is something that I'm wondering, and not to give a pick away, but I'm wondering that about Seattle, too. That was a hellacious, violent, physical game that the Cardinals and Seahawks played on Sunday night just now. And as Jason pointed out on a recap show, the defenses were starting to break down in overtime already. They've been slugging that out and blitzing each other and going back and forth tooth and nail. And they started giving up big plays in overtime because they were starting to run out of gas. I'm not so sure that they're recovered and ready to compete. And Carolina coming off a bye, I mean, you can't get more rested than that at this stage of the season. And Arizona might be as tired as a team might be that's not playing in one of those short Thursday night week situations. So I think Carolina's got a chance to start to turn their season around. Not that they're going to rebound all the way back, get to 500, but they kind of have no excuses for this one. You got a team coming in that just played an absolute hellacious game, and you're coming off a bye. I think Carolina's got all the momentum, all the advantage, and they've got a chance to right the ship, so to speak. So I'm going to pick them to do that this week against the Cardinals.
Yeah, for almost the exact same reasons, I absolutely concur here. I figure Arizona has got to be gassed. They just have to be. I mean, the way that game went last week, their hated division rival, they really did leave it all out on the field. And to lose that game, because it was a tie, but I look at that as an Arizona loss because Arizona was clearly the better team on the field the entire game. Had the game won, and then misses that field goal in overtime and still loses the game in regulation, only being able to put up 3 points that entire game, even though statistically moving the ball defensively, everything that they did was better than Seattle. Now you're asking them to go basically cross country and face a bad but well-rested Carolina team. I don't think this is necessarily going to be the ringing endorsement for Carolina, you know, with, you know, for us thinking that, oh, that's it, the Panthers are back, they're gonna completely turn this thing around. No, I think they're getting an Arizona team that's nowhere near as good as they were last year. Their defense is still playing very well. They're not giving up tons of points. Their defense has not been that bad, but that high flying offense has completely evaporated. They have basically turned into a running team almost exclusively. If David Johnson doesn't get off, then forget it. And where Carolina has been getting gashed has been in the secondary and giving up the big plays in the passing game. And Arizona hasn't shown that they can make those big plays. It just hasn't been there. That magic that they had last year, just creating this high-flying, so fun to watch offense, has not translated into this season at all. So I think Carolina is the better rested team by far. They did not, you know, especially not having to go through that grinder last week with that game between Arizona and Seattle. So perfect spot for a team that's coming off of a bye that needs a win. They're going to, you know, Cam Newton's, you know, apparently not concussed, or at least he's had the 2 weeks now to sort of, you know, get all the cobwebs out and get himself right. And, you know, he came out and said this week that he's going to have to go a little bit more all out, because it's been pointed out that when he gets hurt, it's because he's easing up. So basically he's saying that I'm, instead of protecting myself, you know, maybe not running into these horrible situations, no, I'm going to go harder, because that's just who I am. So screw you guys. So I'm going to run at you and hit you harder, because when I'm getting hurt, it's because I ease up. And that is where he did get the concussion in the Atlanta game, because he basically was running in, I believe it was a 2-point conversion, and got popped because he knew he was in and started easing up. So his solution to this is, I'm just going to put my shoulder down and run over guys now instead of letting them come up and pop me and concuss me. I'm not sure that's the correct analysis that needs to be made by Cam Newton, but I think for this game, it'll be enough. Arizona is so wounded after that game last week. This is my lock of the week.
Oh.
So I'm taking Carolina and locking this one down. I don't see Arizona giving a big fight going cross country, even though it's against an inferior opponent. I think on this day, Carolina will have, especially beating the team that they beat to go to the Super Bowl, where maybe they'll actually, you know, they feel like maybe they've got their number because of the way they owned them so badly in that championship game. Maybe they recapture a little bit of that magic just for 1 week and remember some of that former glory from last year. Because getting to 2-5 is nothing to really be that proud of. But I think Arizona, by not winning that game, by taking that tie and taking themselves out of it as much as they did last week, I don't think they'll have anything in the tank to hang in there with Carolina here.
Yeah, we concur on that one. I didn't have the guts to lock it up, though. That's you're locking up a 1-5 team. That's putting it out there, man. That's having some
playables. I got a game to play with. You know, I got a game to play with.
Yeah, indeed you do. Gloom and doom for this weekend, unfortunately, in our city of Chicago, our former hometown, where the Cubs just lost to the Indians in game 4 of the World Series, putting them down 3-1. Now, if any team can come back and reel off 3 in a row and win the title, it would be this team of young guys who don't really give a damn and don't seem to feel any pressure. But it sure looks like the Indians have their number, and they're going to go on to win the World Series, and the Cubs are going to go down here at home, these 2 losses in a row. If they lose this 3rd one tomorrow and the Indians get to celebrate on their field after all these years at Wrigley Field, that's going to be devastating. But as we've been saying all along, this isn't the first rodeo or the only rodeo for that Cubs team. They're going to be bagged. They're going to be perennial World Series contenders after this. So hopefully the Cub fans won't take it too hard, this beating that the Indians are laying on them right now.
You know, and I have to say, I actually haven't. I mean, I've been watching. First of all, I'm a Cubs fan, so I expect them to lose. There's almost, you have a self-defense mechanism just being a Cubs fan. You just don't expect them to win. You know, you're so used to this anyway. So it's like, okay, you know, what I see is a team that really looks young. Their youth is starting to show. I don't know if you've seen the same thing in this series, but all these young guys who've been so clutch, the moment is starting to look bigger than them. So I could hear it a little bit tonight in the broadcast with Buck and Smoltz, and you could hear it in the broadcast where they're starting to write the eulogy for this Cubs team as basically almost like last year in the NLCS where, okay, you can clearly see that this is a talented team, but they need to learn from this. And they think that this team is good enough that these young guys need this taste to understand this moment. You know, and clearly Cleveland, even is Cleveland the better team? No, on paper, Cleveland is nowhere near being the better team. But what Cleveland is a more veteran team, a more diverse team, you know, and a team that's a little scrappier, where this Cubs team is, you know, their youth and their arrogance and the bravado and everything are starting to work against them. And they're trying to hit the 7-run home run to come back from deficits, you know, and instead of just playing their game, it looks like everything is just, let's just go homer happy and swing for the fences. And but you're right. This isn't a team that's going to, you know, let's say they lose the World Series and now they're done because, you know, they're just going to blow this whole thing up. And now it's the fire sale and all these pieces are going to be leaving town because they mortgaged everything for this one team. In fact, they've done quite the opposite, where they've been more reluctant to get rid of some of these parts because all these guys are coming back. I mean, for the most part, that entire lineup that you see right now is the same lineup that we'll see next year. I'm sure with a few tweaks, I could see them looking for a little bit more, some veteran stability somewhere in that lineup. I would not be surprised to see them make a move for somebody to put some stability in there so that you don't have all these young guys lined up one after the other. You know, Zobrist was the sign that did that this year, but he's one guy. I could see another guy in that mold that you could insert somewhere into that lineup who's going to give a veteran presence, who is not going to just strike out all the time with runners on base, because that's what the Cubs are doing right now. So you don't want to shake it up too much, but if they make that move anywhere, I could see that's where it would be.
Yeah, Contreras and Baez are having some at-bats that just make you go, whoa, dude, you can't hit a home run swinging at a ball out there. Don't swing at that.
No, and it's almost like, you know, he had that early success and these guys fall in love a little bit with the success from earlier in the series and they think they're invincible, and this is what you get with guys that are 22 years old. I mean, let's not forget that the majority of this team is 24 or younger.
Yep.
And it makes sense, most of these guys most of these guys have not even come close to hitting the primes of their careers. And they won 103 games and made it to the World Series. So, yeah, they're not going anywhere.
No. They get the snot knocked out of them by the Mets last year. They come back the next year and make it to the World Series. They're getting beaten by the Indians this year. Who knows? They may come back and get that taste. And next year they may take it the next step. They just might do that. Yep. So,
well, you've got a feeling that – yeah, you've got to have a feeling that for the next 5 years or so that this really feels like a World Series or bust team every year for about the next 5 years at least.
But that's all you can do is just build the best organization you can and take as many shots at it as it takes. That's the best you can do.
Yeah. So, you know, but I have to also be, because I'm a Cubs fan, I also have to be the eternal optimist. It's not over yet.
I admit that. If anyone could run off three in a row from the depths of nowhere, it would be these kids. It wouldn't surprise me. On to our third spooky highlight game of the week. Speaking of Chicago, speaking of bad sports, The Cubs are not this. They are not the Bears. They're not 1-6, and they're not having a quarterback coming back that nobody wants to see up on the field, basically. All the reports out of Chicago seem to indicate that Jay Cutler is finished after this season. That one report said John Fox is basically finished with Cutler, like he's through with Cutler mentally, like he doesn't even want him around. But because Brian Hoyer broke his arm, he kind of has to have him around. So that's another sort of toxic locker room situation. So that's a nice spooky highlight game. The Chicago Bears, 1-6. No one really expected much from the Bears this year, but 1-6 is really, really bad. And they've looked even worse than that record at times. Hosting the 5-1 Minnesota Vikings. That's not a spooky half, obviously. The Vikings are 5-1, but Sam Bradford's play last week, pretty spooky. So this might be Pick Fest 2016. Sam Bradford and Jay Cutler, when they get together, they can string together some picks. They can throw some INTs in some really bad spots. So we might have one of those nights where you got 5 or 6 picks going back and forth in the air. So we'll see what happens. But Monday Night Football, Vikings and Bears, Vikings 5-1, Bears 1-6. Therefore, the Vikings are favored on the road. 4 points favorites. Minnesota gives 4 at Chicago. Jason, what's your pick?
I'm gonna actually take the Bears here on Monday night, believe it or not. I think the real Sam Bradford finally stood up. I don't know what it is, but I think the Sam Bradford that you and I have been waiting for finally showed up last week in Philadelphia, throwing horrible red zone interceptions, looking lost, throwing, missing people. We're starting to see the one dimensionality, the one dimensionality, I guess, is that the word? It's a word now. How bad that offense is looking. Apparently there will be no Jerick McKinnon in this game, so it's going to be the Matt Asiata show. And Jay Cutler, maybe Jay Cutler will be free from the burden of the city of Chicago, because now he knows that, hey, maybe I can string together a decent, 6, 8, 10 weeks of football and at least get myself a job somewhere else. There will be somebody with the quarterback play in this league. Somebody out there will take a chance on Jay Cutler. I don't think this is the end of Jay Cutler. Is sort of a sad ending, because even though I am not a Bears fan, I know you are, he's still one of the best, if not the best, just pure quarterback that city's ever actually had. But because the Bears are in Chicago is a team that's enamored with the backup quarterback and the third string quarterback, and that's always the best guy out on the field, that they're going to go ahead and draft themselves someone, or they'll do something, but it won't matter, because if they draft a quarterback number one, the most popular guy in town will still be the backup. So it doesn't really matter what they do at that position. That city just is doomed to fail at the quarterback position. And this could be a spot for Jay Cutler here to sort of start making up for that a little bit and maybe put himself in a better position. Now he just gets to be selfish and play for himself. So he's in a very similar situation, I would say, to Ryan Fitzpatrick. Nobody really wants him out there. They've sort of given up on him, but he is talented enough. And the Bears have been scuffling. I mean, they've been pretty awful. Much like with Cleveland, at least they're trying. I will give them credit. They're not just going out there and getting destroyed. They are showing up, and they are playing football. John Fox is not going to let this team just show up and get annihilated. And I worry a little bit for Minnesota that after that charmed start to the season, that maybe we're going to start to see the no Adrian Peterson effect, and the fact that it's Sam Bradford playing quarterback for them, maybe start to wear on them a little bit. Probably still, I mean, there's still the class of that division at this point, because Detroit and Green Bay, although Detroit may be the second best team in that division right now, which is really scary to say, but Minnesota, yeah, I think now that the Eagles popped up and got them, I think maybe Minnesota isn't going to feel so invincible. And, it seems like if they're not getting those bump in the night kind of plays with weird, weird bounces, weird special teams plays, defensive touchdowns that they are quite beatable. So I think this is a spot where the Bears could pop up and surprise them. I'll take the Bears as a home favorite on Monday Night Football. What a shock.
Well, underdog.
As a home underdog. Yeah, that's what I meant. Me taking the Bears as an underdog on Monday night. Who would have thought that?
Yeah. Bear whispering. He's trying to bear whisper, folks. And Matt Asiata taking over as running back for the Vikings. The difference in that is McKinnon has a little more burst, and Asiata is more of a plotter. So just putting his shoulder down and trying to grind 3 yards in a cloud of dust. So that type of runner. But they need some spark because McKinnon hasn't found those lanes and hasn't broken out. And the Vikings, as a result, are at the bottom of the league in running the football. I would have never imagined the Vikings only averaging 2.6 yards per carry, but that's exactly where they are right now.
That's hideous.
Off of that, it really is. Off of that Bradford game last week, I really want to trust Mike Zimmer and to right the ship. He's been so solid as a coach. I want to trust North Turner to write Sam Bradford and draw up a new game plan and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. Check downs, short throws, use your tight ends, use your running backs, and let's dial it back a notch here. Let's not try to go out and show off your arm and win every game through the air. So I really want to take the Vikings and give the 4, but I'm not going to do it. I'm with Jason. I'm going to take the Bears and take the points, not necessarily to win, but Jay Cutler coming back, certainly, obviously an upgrade over Matt Barkley. That goes without saying. But yeah, the Bears are going to compete. They got their doors blown off on Monday night by the Eagles, and the Vikings are probably better than the Eagles, but the Eagles just beat them this past Sunday. So I think the Bears are actually going to give it a shot and compete in this game. Again, the running game and the plotting of Matt Asiata, I don't think they're going to get too much on the ground. They haven't gotten much all year. And Sam Bradford through the air should be cut off, should be choked off a little bit by North Turner. There should not be – you shouldn't expect more than about 220 through the air for Sam Bradford because they're not going to let him try too much. And Jay Cutler might throw the soul-crushing INT to lose the game, which is kind of what he does. But he might throw the game-winning touchdown to Alshon Jeffery in his return game. I can see that happening very easily. So I'm actually with you. I'm going to take the Bears to compete and stay close enough in this game, stay 4 points close. The Vikings are very good and very solid. We both think that, but I don't know if they're 5-0, 5-1 solid. They were on their way to like one of the best records in football, if not the best record in football. And they're still on that track, but there's a little bit of coming down that you mentioned that they might need to do right now because they were flying so high. And I think they might continue to come down in this game Monday night.
It'll be interesting to know what it'll be interesting to hear what our football fan rush folks have to say about this one, being that, you know, their two hosts are both a huge Vikings and a huge Bears fan. So I'm sure that's going to be a contemptuous show that they have tomorrow trying to talk about this game and make that pick. So I'm sure there'll be a little more emotion behind that pick. Where we can sort of sit back and be a little more objective. We're not throwing our hearts into this pick.
Tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Central Time, they'll be debating it out. I may have to check in and take their temperature tomorrow once again. And now on to the rest of Week 8 in even more less detail, which is actually chock full of decent to really good games. Yeah. That we're not going to get much time to because we were doing our spooky picks.
But you know what? We'll have plenty of time to talk about these teams the whole rest of the season. We're not going to talk that much about the Bears, the Browns, the Jets, or the Panthers, or maybe the Cardinals the whole rest of the way. We're not going to talk about these teams that much. So this is their last little bit of run.
All right, we start with the rest of the picks tomorrow morning back overseas. Another game in Europe is the last one for this season, the last England game. I guess they're back at Wembley Stadium. I don't know. I didn't check because I don't care because it's not that important. The Washington Redskins and the Cincinnati Bengals in what should be a very evenly matched game. I actually had a lot of trouble all week thinking which way I was going to go in this one. 4-3 Washington is actually getting 3 points, 3-point underdogs against 3-4 Cincinnati over in London.
Well, that's because Cincinnati is at home.
Oh, they are?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the home cop-out line. The Bengals are the ones losing the home game here, hosting the Redskins. No, we talk about Arizona. Cincinnati, it would be the Cardinals of the AFC. I mean, that team is it's a hot mess. I mean, I know Washington lost last week in sort of a heartbreaking manner to a surprisingly game Detroit team. I mean, I guess we've been a little hesitant in our praise of Detroit, but they're right there. I mean, Detroit is they're 4-3. They've been hanging around. They really do. I mean, if Minnesota falters, I really do think it would be the Lions to jump up into that spot in that NFC North right now. I don't think it would be Green Bay. So I don't think that's anything for Washington to be hanging their heads on, you know, down about too much. I do think Washington here on a neutral site is the better team right now. And for that reason, I'm going to take the Redskins on the road to cover this number.
I concur. Like I said, I was going back and forth all week. The Dolphins are green against the Washington weapons. Jordan Reed is expected back for the Redskins. Matt Jones will be out with an injury, so Robert Kelly is pretty good. And spots will be the starting running back for the Redskins. So Bar Kelly finds a way to lead into the last
game. And you're breaking up really bad over there.
No, not again. I don't even know if I have time to break out and call the phone line, but I guess I'll give it a try. You can hear this. We're moving on to Sunday action, New Orleans and Seattle. Seattle at 4-1-1, 1.5-point favorites on the road at 2-4 New Orleans.
I made out the pick. I at least heard what that's going to be. I'm gonna take the New Orleans here at home. I think that the Saints are capable of putting up a lot of offense. Not a good team for the other team in that slobber knocker last week, Seattle. Not a good team for them to have to go on the road and face basically Drew Brees and all that offense. Might be a little too much. If you're tired, you don't want to be tired going to New Orleans to play the Saints because they will run you out of the building. Because the defense is terrible. That defense in New Orleans, we know they give up the booty with the best of them, but I don't know if Seattle has the offense to hang with the Saints in this spot because talk about teams that haven't looked right. That, you know, with Russell Wilson being sort of nicked up all season so far, I don't think Seattle really looks right. So I will take the Saints at home to pretty easily take out the Seahawks.
Yeah, I was trying not to give away a pick, but I was talking earlier about I wonder how many battle scars are there for Arizona and Seattle after that game that they had last Sunday night. I'm with you. I'm going to take the Saints over Seattle. Clearly the Saints are not the better team, but Seattle coming off of that war to try to come in and defend the New Orleans Saints in the dome on that turf, oh my God, that should not be easy at all. I feel sorry for the Seattle defenders having to take on that tall task. So I'm going to take the Saints as well. Oakland and Tampa Bay should be interesting. Oakland, here we go again. Oakland going east. The last two times going east, pulling out a win. All five of their road games so far this year, counting this one, are going to be noon starts for a team out in California. And they've won the first four, so they're going for 5-0 on the road if they can win this one at Tampa Bay, who's 0-2 at home. So Oakland predictably is a favorite. 1 point only, but Oakland -1 at Tampa.
Yeah, asking a West Coast team, a young West Coast team, to go on the road cross-country 5 times in a row and come out with a win, it's a little too much even for me. Even though this is probably the most, not the most fearsome of the opponents that Oakland has gone on the road and beaten, I think that actually works against them. And I think that Tampa Bay sneaks out a win here at home against the Raiders.
This is Jacquizz Rodgers for the Buccaneers. This is second straight week starting against a team who coming into the game was giving up 5 yards per carry. Last week was San Francisco. This week it's Oakland. Something's going on in the Bay Area. I don't know what, but they're giving up the booty on the ground. Oakland giving up the booty in the air as well. The worst defense in football. As I pointed out last week when I picked against them and it didn't work out for me. But I concur with you. I will take Tampa again. It's just can't keep up, can it? They just can't keep going out east and winning all these games, I wouldn't think. I don't think the Buccaneers are a great team, but I'll take them over Oakland in this spot one time. Jameis only needs one big play to Mike Evans downfield to beat the Oakland Raiders, I think. New England and Buffalo. We just saw this matchup a couple weeks ago, and it was not good for New England. They thought they were going to go a perfect 4-0 without Tom Brady for his suspension, and the Bills said, oh, no, we're going to go up there to New England with Jack Brisket, and the Bills wound up shutting out the Patriots. Tom Brady's back now. I don't think the Patriots are getting shut out, but what do we think is actually going to happen? New England, predictably, is a big favorite on the road. New England is 6-1, gives 6 points at 4-3 Buffalo.
Yeah, and I think it'll go about the way we expect it to, which is New England will go in there and they'll handle their business. Buffalo has been a nice story with their bounce back. They did go to New England and shut out Jake Brisket. I mean, that was a 16-0 game. I have a little feeling that New England is going to probably want to run this up on their buddy Rex. And I can see this getting ugly and staying ugly for an extended period of time. I don't think Buffalo has the horses to stay with New England in this game. Almost made this my lock of the week, but I've gotten, I can't keep going to the well too many times on New England being my lock. I can't just take New England to be my lock the whole rest of the year. So, but I do see New England covering this number quite easily. Give me the Patriots squish.
And once again, I keep pointing out when the Bills lose all these horses on offense, how can they keep producing on offense with all these guys missing? In the receiving core, I keep talking about Sammy Watkins, who's not there. Then Robert Woods didn't play last week. And I was like, well, who's Tyrod Taylor going to throw to? So he makes a start of Marquise Goodwin. Guess who's not playing this week? Marquise Goodwin is not playing this week. Neither is LeSean McCoy. Just keep missing parts. Woods, I guess, will be back out there, but he's hobbled. So I don't know if you should count on too much from them. I don't know how Buffalo feels a team competitive enough to keep up with New England. And yet, I just think that at Pittsburgh and at Buffalo, even though that wasn't all of Pittsburgh last week, of course, with Ben Roethlisberger out, shouldn't that be the hardest stretch of the year for New England at Pitt, at Buffalo? Shouldn't that actually have some effect? If they just steamroll Pittsburgh and Buffalo on the road like that, who's going to touch New England all year? They might cover every spread the rest of the way. I'm going to take the Bills with the points because they compete against New England, clearly, as we saw in week 4, and because there should be some kind of bounce back against Tom Brady. He can't play perfect like this every damn game, right? He can't, right? You would think, I guess. I don't know. The Lions and the Texans in a battle of mediocre 4-3 teams. They're both over 500 at the moment, so they couldn't be a spooky matchup, but I'm not quite sure what to make of this one. I've struggled with this all week as well. Detroit is actually a slight underdog. Detroit gets 1 point on the road at Houston.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Lions. I don't seem to remember Lions fans starting a GoFundMe account to buy out Matt Stafford's contract. That tells you that's how bad Brock Osweiler is and has been and will continue to be. And now, and again, no J.J. Watt, Houston. This is just going to be a snowball effect the whole rest of the way. They hate the quarterback. The defense is getting worse. I will take the Lions, who have been sort of like steady Eddies here this season. to go on the road and get the win and move to 5-3. Oh my God, the Lions. Ugh.
What if the Texans win? They would be 5-3 with that shit quarterback. And they're 4-0 at home. They can't win unless they're at home, so this would be the spot for them to do it. I struggled all week because it's either going to be Houston goes down at home without J.J. Watt, they finally lose a home game with that terrible quarterback, or they rise up and Osweiler, I don't know why I almost called him Oswald, Osweiler gets up against the Detroit defense, which is no great shakes, and makes something out of himself and gets a victory. And much to my own surprise, I'm actually going to go with Houston to do that. I'm actually going to take the Texans to find a way to get a win. Darius Slay has been the best cornerback for Detroit all season. He's actually made plays out there, and he's not going to play in that game, and I just think that's going to make the difference. I think finally Osweiler can go to Nuke Hopkins and Will Fuller with all the confidence that he could possibly summon and muster. If he has any left at all, then this will be the game to pull it out. Chiefs and Colts. God, I hope Alex Smith isn't having nightmares about that playoff game. I hope he's not having flashbacks. If he is, he's going to be a quivering puddle of sweat by the time this game happens tomorrow. Kansas City at 4-2, 2.5-point favorites against the 3-4, looking like Wobegon Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah, I don't trust the Colts at all. This is not the same team that came back all the way and stormed back against the Chiefs in that playoff game a few years ago. Not even close. They can't play defense, and Andrew Luck he's just not the same. That team does not move the ball with any consistency enough that I think that the Chiefs are going to have to worry too much here in the dome. It's a neutral, you know, it's a good track for Kansas City to go in there, play their game, keep it low scoring, and sneak out of there and escape with that win. Kansas City's the better team. I'm taking them.
That was 45-44 was the final of that 2013 wild card game in which Chiefs were leading 28-0 and found a way to lose that game. I still can't believe that happened. Boy, Indy needs this. If they want to do anything at all, they need this badly. Dante Moncrief is supposed to return for them. They've been relying on T.Y. Hilton and nobody else in that offense for most of the year. So just a little bit of help back for them, I think that'll help them certainly. So I'm actually going to take the Colts here. Don't feel very confident about it at all, but I will take Indy to find a way. And you got Kansas City, right? I don't know why I typed in Indy for you.
No, I have Kansas City.
Yeah, I'll change that. San Diego and Denver, we saw this as well earlier this year, week 6 on a Thursday night. The Chargers got them. Denver is a 4-point favorite at home. San Diego plus 4 at Denver.
You know, the Chargers have kind of turned into a nice little story here. They play no defense. And the Broncos are still a very good defense, but again, Trevor Siemian, he's starting to show a little bit of weathering. He's young. He's making all these starts for him. He's just going deeper into the season. I'm going to go with the veteran team here, San Diego, to keep it close, and give me a cover.
I'm back on the headset. Is it any better? How's that sound?
It sounds like you're underwater.
Oh, it's because I'm on the phone and on the headset. I need to choose one, right? Okay, I'm going to get back off the headset. I thought all week I was actually, I should completely unplug the headset because I probably still sound underwater. I thought all week I was going to take San Diego because I'm – okay, Phillip Rivers, he's just the man. I'm about ready to follow him to the ends of the earth, and Denver coming back down from the Osweiler game off a short week, and San Diego already got him, so they know how to do it. I'm actually going to go with the Broncos after all of that because I just get this feeling that they're going to get a little revenge for that San Diego game earlier in the year, and they're going to smack Phillip Rivers around and then play the defense the way they're supposed to. Green Bay and Atlanta. Packers 4-2, 3-point dogs on the road at the 4-3 Falcons.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Atlanta here. I don't think that the Green Bay offense can keep up with the Atlanta offense blow for blow this whole game. Green Bay's defense has been quite suspect, and I seem to remember Julio Jones going insane the last time they played. I would not be shocked to see that again. So give me the Falcons here at home.
The way Aaron Rodgers is playing, Green Bay is missing three cornerbacks going to Atlanta. Yeah, lock that shit up. Atlanta is my lock of the week, giving three against the Packers. The way they're playing, the Falcons should just eat them up. We are off the air, so there's a pick missing from the live show. So if you're, but no one listens live, so it's okay. So here it is in the podcast as we get to Philly and Dallas, so we can actually stretch out and talk as much about that as we want.
Yeah, almost like
Sunday
the
night.
highlight game of the week, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
highlight game.
Exactly right. So 4-2 Philadelphia as they battle for the top of the NFC East with the Cowboys. Philly is a 5-point underdog at the 5-1 coming off a bye Dallas Cowboys.
That's a surprising large line. I mean, that number seems big for the magnitude of this matchup. I know that Dallas is seriously impressive. I mean, they have been whooping people pretty good. They've been rolling people up. That offensive line, Ezekiel Elliott, Dak Prescott, Black Jesus, he's been playing. He's been doing yeoman's work. He has not been doing anything flashy. But he's been keeping that offense on schedule and letting that offensive line just maul people. And the defense for Dallas has surprisingly been efficient. They're not great, but they're not just going out there and giving it up. It helps when they can play ball control offense and go on these long punishing drives, and that helps to shorten the games and give them the edge. But Philadelphia has been playing good football all year, so I'm surprised to see the size of this number, considering you've got all the magic formula factors. You know, two good teams, division rivals, hated division rivals. So these teams, that there's no love between these two teams. I'm stunned that this isn't just the cop out 3-point line. I'm wondering, does somebody out there know something that we don't know? I mean, is there something going on for the Eagles to the negative side that's making this number move? Or is this just blatant, cowboy love? It's the Cowboys. They're the best. They're America's team. I don't buy into that. I don't buy into any of that. That's almost like voodoo mysticism type, stuff there, if that's what it really is. So just on that reason alone, I'm taking the points. I do believe that the Cowboys are going to win the game. But I don't see this being a blowout. The Eagles' defense has been tight. Their offense is dynamic enough that I think they'll be able to make this a competitive game and keep it within five. Am I still on the show? Hello?
Yeah, I'm back. I was trying to headset again.
I was like, I had that moment where I was like, oh my God, okay, either the show is over and I don't know it, or
no,
you disappeared.
I muted the phone and I went back on the headset again, but you didn't hear anything at all?
No.
Okay, well, I'll dispose of the headset the rest of the evening then, so at least I know that much. Yeah, I think the voodoo magic is that the way the Cowboys played before they went on their bye, which was mauling and destructive and looked like they had everything working on offense that you could want, because when they stopped running, we talked about this a little bit on previous shows, when they stopped running and had to run the 2-minute drill where they had to throw the ball, Dak Prescott seemed to complete every pass for 20 yards without any impunity. Just bing, bang, bing, down the field as easy as it could get. And then the third quarter would start and back to grinding it out and busting it in your fucking mouth and doing whatever they want to do. So combine the way they had been playing with what Carson Wentz and the Eagles showed last week, which was a very big vulnerability. The kid quarterback finally cracked and started making some really bad throws and some bad plays and looking like a rookie finally for one of the few times this season. I think it was just a perfect storm there of the Eagles finally showing some reason to doubt them, and the Cowboys, the last time they played, showing reasons to think that they were pretty much indestructible. And then you add in the Cowboys were on a bye last week, so they're extra rested. and also add in that Dez Bryant is due to come back in this game. How effective he's going to be, nobody knows, and how much they're even going to target him, because the game plan seems to be running through Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott right now. Nobody knows. So Bryant might not get more than 3 or 4 targets in the entire game. So, but all of those factors, I think, are why that spread is where it is. So I understand it. I believe in it. I'm going to take the Cowboys. I'm going to give the 5 points. I don't know if it's going to be statistically a blowout. It might be one of those deals where the Eagles have a comparable amount of yardage from scrimmage as the Cowboys. But when you get to the red zone and you need the big score, the touchdowns, I certainly would trust that the Cowboys would break through and get those scores, and that the Eagles would have to keep settling for field goals. And in the end, those really add up. And I think that'll add up enough for the Cowboys to get a win by a touchdown or maybe even two.
Wow. Well, so you're on board with the Dallas Cowboys here. You sort of, I have been as well. That moment when I had them in Green Bay to kind of go in there and just annihilate the Packers. And I think that was sort of the eye-opening moment. That was sort of like the hey, look, we've arrived game for the Cowboys. So we'll see. I mean, it's definitely been better results than I think anybody has expected so far. I don't think, unless you're just like a diehard Cowboys fan and you're drinking the Kool-Aid, I don't think there's anybody out there objectively looking at the sport who thought that the Cowboys were going to be this good.
Right. I'm on board for the Cowboys in as far as this week, with that offensive line coming off a bye, going against the run defense, giving up 4.5 yards a carry. So for those factors, I am on board with the Cowboys.
Sure. And we'll see if this is a big spot for the Eagles. I mean, as far as, with Carson Wentz, and this is what it's all about, son. you passed the test against the Vikings. He did a good job, moving them and helping guide them to that win against Minnesota. Although Minnesota was as self-destructive as Philadelphia was good. Dallas, this isn't the stupidest team in football, Cowboys, anymore. They're not just going to go out there and just beat themselves. So we'll see how good the Eagles are and what they have for Dallas in this game. I could see this being a back and forth between the two rookie quarterbacks, but I could also see this being a tough spot for Carson Wentz, who's going to maybe he'll try to do a little too much to bring the Eagles back, or try to keep the Eagles in the game and keep them moving. But overall, if I was predicting the score of this game, I would not have Dallas by more than 5.
Well,
which means you did predict the score of this game. So what did you predict this final as?
Not that I want to put myself on the line for all the games, but that one I actually see 31-16, but that's not all necessarily offense. That there may be a defensive touchdown thrown in there because of Carson Wentz getting in a big spot on the road at Jerry World, maybe giving up a pick six somewhere along the way.
Yeah. I would never put you on the spot and try to have you actually predict the score of every game.
That would be awful if I had all my predicted scores out there, because a lot of them are way, way, way off. So I don't
but at least that. You don't pick every score to be within 3 points.
No, I don't pick every score to just happen to come within 1 point of whatever the point spread is.
Yeah. Yeah, that was back from the old Sun Times. There was a guy either in the Sun Times or the Trib. This is back in the newspaper days, people. Newspapers. Do we have to explain what newspapers are?
I assume they still have picks on the Sun Times website or the Tribune website.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. With the little blurbs, though. But they'd always have what the point spread would be in that little breakdown every week of the person picking the games. And if it was a 6-point spread, somebody was going to be winning by 5 or 7.
Yep.
Every game.
Every single game. Have them winning by one.
That was back when, I remember, being in school, being in high school, we always had to have we had to have our Sun Times and our Tribune so that we could, see what the lines were, for one. That was the way we used to have to get our lines. Can you believe it? Yeah. We used to have to actually get our betting lines from the newspaper.
Before the internet, kids.
And then the way to read about the games and know what was going to happen in the games, or the only way sometimes you got a recap on the games, was by reading it in the newspaper, in the Monday newspaper.
That could be a segment in and of itself. Before the internet, as it's spooky and scary as anything.
It is, to try to think about what things were like, you know, and how it was for us growing up before the age of information and everything that we have now, that we, all the things that we relied on. And one of them, the chief one for us for picking these games, was the newspaper.
How about research papers? You had to go to a library to get research. There was no other way to do it.
Or if you had to look up,
read books.
Or you had to go into the machine for the
microfiche.
The microfiche machines for the old newspaper articles and stuff like
that. Oh my God. Oh. You had to go back and find what film you want. You had to go through a cabinet.
Yeah.
Or many cabinets, several cabinets, and find the microfiche of the newspaper clipping that you wanted from 1954 or whatever, and find that particular strip that had the pages of the newspaper on the film, and then you had to go to this old-ass machine and thread the film through there and then read each page to see what you were looking for that way, and then make photocopies from that. You couldn't just punch it up on the internet and go search it and print it out. Nope, could not do that.
Yeah, there's you know, anybody our age or younger is like, what are they talking about?
I would hope that teachers are still old enough that they're still assigning kids to go do that, just to make sure that they know how to do things in a way other than just search than surf the net. Some of these teachers have to be so old that they assign you a research paper where you can't use, I don't know how you do that, say you can't use the internet, but like make sure that an element of your paper has to be that you go to the library and run off a copy of this, that, and you have to do it this way. You have to get proof that you were at the library or something like that. I'm sure there's some crusty old teachers that make you do that, and the kids are like, man, why do I gotta do it like this? I can just pull it up on my phone, man. I don't need to do all this. I'm sure someone's making them do that.
Yeah,
that's the only way we could.
The dark ages.
Any other options?
Yeah, those are the dark ages.
Literally, the dark ages. We'd be at the library until dark doing that shit because it took forever.
How we got any education in such Stone Age times?
Primitive.
Yeah, we had to read. We had to carry all of our books around in 40-pound book bags. Instead of, now it's all on like a tablet. Now it's all on an iPad.
Yep. Mom, I can't do homework. My iPad ran out of battery juice. I can't do it. Sorry. Can you imagine?
No, we just had to carry around these enormous books. I remember that social studies book from Skinner. I mean, from grade school. That book was 20 pounds.
It was huge. And it didn't change either. As far as when I went to Ogden, that social studies book was humongous. And when I went to Whitney Young for high school, that social, just something about the social studies book were always just the biggest, hardest, like, heaviest books you could possibly find.
History books, social studies books and social studies books were just the worst. And then, you know, like the Spanish book wasn't that bad. The math books weren't that horrible. English books were rough. English was always a pretty hefty book. But yeah, it was always social studies and history. I mean, those books were enormous.
I think my algebra book was pretty bad too. So the math was fine until you started getting like algebra and trig and the more difficult stuff. But grade school, no problem. Easy peasy.
that's why social studies was the book wrestling champion all the time.
Well, it was the heaviest.
It was the Andre the Giant of the book wrestling world.
It was undefeated. Yes, I was such a bored kid in school. I would wrestle my books against each other.
That's and you had stats for them and everything.
Yeah, I was weird. I'm still weird. What can I say?
That's okay. I had my paper ball baseball league. You know, growing up. You know, where I had. You know,
well, I had that too.
Yeah, you had the bottle cap, right?
Bottle cap and a comb.
Bottle cap and a comb, and I had the paper towel roll with the paper ball that was taped up. You had to tape it up.
Yeah, we just made our own little game in the middle of my living room. And
that's how it was for me. And, you know, and you know, certain areas, if the ball got hit to certain spots, that would be like, you know, some of those were a triple, some of them were a home run. I kept stats. I actually kept stats for the Paperball Baseball League.
Me too.
So
I still remember Jerry Humphrey. Was it Humphrey?
Jerry Mumphrey was a stud. Jerry
Mumphrey was a, he was a beast. They couldn't get Jerry Mumphrey out, man. Yeah.
And now you just play the MLB The Show, which is like the most photorealistic thing that there is.
Oh God, yeah, because the video RBI baseball, and that was it, right?
I had Hardball. Hardball was my game. Okay. Atari, and that had two teams. All the players had names, but there were only two teams. It was always the same two teams and the same guys. And yeah, it didn't keep any stats, so I actually kept all my stats. I kept all the stats for all my players and played all those games. I was always the same team. I was never the other. It was always the All Stars. I was never the champs. And I kept the stats for all my guys.
In case you're wondering how we got this way, folks, this is how. This is the early beginnings.
When there was no imagination. You know, it was all imagination. Your imagination.
Yeah, all you had.
Because then I could remember finally in the Nintendo days getting Baseball Simulator 1000 was the name of the game. And it kept all the stats. And I thought it was like the greatest thing ever.
I'm sure.
Like Super Tecmo Bowl, which was the first of the football games that really kept all of the statistics and saved them. And it was amazing that I could play through a whole season as Atlanta, and all my stats got kept. Sean Collins was a monster. He was my wide receiver, just going up and getting it. But it was like, wow, this was so revolutionary after all the years of, if I wanted to do anything with statistics, I had to keep them myself.
Well, that's how you build math skills and figure out point spreads. And
that,
and
I taught myself how to calculate ERAs and all kinds of fun stuff.
Yep, I remember that too. I finally figured out the formula for WHIP when I was in like sixth or seventh grade, and I wrote it down on a piece of paper and taped it on my bedroom wall so I wouldn't forget how to do WHIP, because I was so excited. I finally remembered how to do WHIP.
And then, of course, I had the basketball, where I had the cardboard box that was taped to my wall. I'd be in my room shooting baskets with paper balls or Nerf balls. It was whatever it was to do something, you know, sports related. And when, you know, it was by myself, when I wasn't outside playing ball in the street or in the backyard, I was in my house playing sports.
Oh man, I tortured my future aunt, my uncle's wife, when she was just his girlfriend. I don't even remember how old I was. I couldn't have been more than six or seven, but I just grabbed her hand and wouldn't let go until she would come into my bedroom with me so she could see me play one of those made-up games against myself, where I got a waste basket up against the closet door, and I'm using a Nerf ball to pretend I'm the Bulls against Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and the Lakers. And she actually sat there and watched me play like a whole half of this by myself. And I can't believe she did that, and she had the patience to do that, but she had to be walking away going, that kid's got issues.
And she still married your uncle.
She's still married into the family. She knew we were kooks, but she did it anyway, and she's the salt of the earth. So go figure.
Yeah, so that's actually some very telling insight into how we ended up the way we ended up with our love of sports, your love of statistics, and you know.
If you're wondering how you get that way, that's a small sliver of how you get that way. We've got many, many, many other stories.
Oh yeah,
we
can't get into them all, but we just went kings of non sequitur there a little bit.
Oh, no doubt. That's why we are the kings of non sequitur. We can do it at any time of night, no matter what. This is what we would do. If we were making the picks on the phone, we would go into something like that non sequitur, and we'd look up and it'd be midnight.
Pretty much.
Hey, man, you remember who was that made up guy that you had in your in your bottle cap baseball league? You know, it's like, oh yeah.
Well, Mike Bielecki was just a beast, man. He got
Mike
everybody.
Bielecki. But then we graduated to the world of like PlayStation and all that, where it was made up guys, you know. So we all had our you know, our favorite made up guys, the guys who would get drafted. You know, you had your Baron Armstrong, and you know, Eli Fortner, I believe, was the made up Bulls player that I was always giving you crap about, telling you I was going to actually send you a Fortner jersey.
And your many different baseball players, you had your Ichiro Reed, and you had your...
No, Ichiro Reed was on your team. My guy was Ramon Baez.
Yeah, that was your speedster. That was your 99 speedster guy.
That was the guy I traded for every... Because I had to trade for him from the Cardinals because he had 99 speed in MLB 2005.
MVP.
MVP 2005. This guy had 99. He was the only guy in the game that had a speed rating of 99, and he couldn't get thrown out stealing a base.
It was crazy. I'd never seen anything like that. I couldn't find him in my game for some reason, even though we had the same game. But I looked for him too.
Yeah, but made up guys.
He must have retired in my game.
You fall in love with these made up guys. It's like I'm playing through a season of Madden, and I'm into that second season. I always sim out the first season so I can go through the draft and everything. And it's like you just sort of fall in love with these guys that you draft and develop, and because they're your guys, and you know, just, so you become homers for these guys, and then you even though they're bad, you somehow still find a way to get them playing time, even though they're bad. Because you want to get their stats up higher, because that's the reward now, you know, in these games, because it's more like a role playing game. So you get these bums in, and you get them get a touchdown, you get some good plays, and now they get experience, and now you can train them to be better. And it's like you can take anybody and make them a better player.
Now the question is, who's going to take the next step and create the game in which you go full on like role play with the guy, where you draft a guy and you don't just get his stats and you don't just try to make him better as a player, but you also get his personality. So this guy is the wide receiver diva with the blonde hair who makes love to the kicking net, and this other guy is the violent thug that beats his wife off the field, but when
See,
he meets
I
him,
remember
he's a perfect gentleman and he's got a heart of gold, so you have a soft spot for him. I'm waiting for someone to invent that game.
I remember writing a blog post about this right at the very beginning of the blog about ways that they needed to improve video games for sports. And that was one of the things that I said was missing, was like crime, you know, and personality and drugs, you know, where like your player, you know, you all of a sudden you get to that little mini game and you see the little guy with the trench coat. It's like, hey, your player has been approached by his fake Dominican cousin, you know?
Oh no.
You know,
no, don't do it.
But if you do it, then you get the performance boost. But then you run the risk of getting caught. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you could have the little drug test mini game where the guy has to drive the sample around like Grand Theft Auto style. And you could do the Ryan Braun thing. It's almost like Crazy Taxi. The guy's trying to get the sample in time to the lab. Otherwise, your player gets off.
Oh my god.
Oh,
you might
man.
Get 3 months of awesome play that boosts your team into first place, but at any point you might turn the game on and your guy's been suspended for a year.
Right. You get that 4-game suspension and it's like, oh man, do I keep doing it because my guy's just not good enough, you know? Or do I just try to have the whole team be juiced because they can't all get caught, right? They can't all get caught. You turn it into the steroid era.
And the Josh Brown mode. Is he good enough to keep even though he slaps his wife around?
Yeah. And then you can have the little elevator mini game, the little Ray Rice elevator mini game.
Oh.
You know, and then it turns into Mortal Kombat, you know? Finish her. Mortal Kombat. You know.
Wait, but she might have a special superpower. You don't know. She might be like one of the American Gladiator chicks. So you want to take that chance.
Zap. She's zapped.
Yeah. You don't want to take that chance because she might kick your ass, and now you're really fucked because now you're going to be suspended and you got your ass kicked by a chick. So
you don't want her to be the other one of the other girls from American Gladiators, like Nitro.
Yeah, she sucked.
Yeah, you see what I did there? Yeah.
I see what you did. Oh God. Okay. I think we should. I think we should cut it off here before
we embarrass ourselves even more. Where did this go? Microfiche. Start with microfiche. This went off the rails. This totally has gone off the rails.
Completely off the rails. This is more non sequitur than maybe of ever. I mean, just. So, by the way, you're talking about the early blog post that was on. The blog site, once again, for those of you that are interested in going back and finding that, would be inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. All our picks are always up there. In addition to that, however, back when we had a little more time, sometimes we would write pieces that we would explore different areas and thoughts and ideas. I remember one year I wrote, I compared every single team at that point of the season to a professional wrestler in the past and tried to match up personalities that way. It wasn't anything I planned. It just came to me and I said, ooh, I should write this up as a blog post. So there's different things up there. It's not all picks, but all the picks are always up there as well. So I'll be getting to posting that. This week's picks, I'll be getting to posting that as soon as I get off the air here. So. But yeah, we've got a lot of thoughts. We got a lot of things that we've done in the past and talked about, and we can call up any of those memories at any time during any show because we've been friends since first grade, and we can always bring up something that we've talked about or done and get into it. And next thing you know, the sniper is knocking on our door, about to cut the show off on us.
That was fun.
That was a thing. So unless you have anything else.
No, I'm afraid where this would go.
No shit. I think that's pretty bad. That's bad enough. The Ray Rice mode of the video game where you're beating up a woman in the elevator. I think that's pretty bad, right? I think we should stop before we go any further from that. So Tuesday night for recaps is good for you?
Yeah, that should work. I'm glad I have the mute button here because you just missed like one of the biggest coughing fits ever.
Oh no!
So yeah, yeah. I'm still fighting the sickness from last week. It's, you know, all the bad stuff's gone, but the cough is still there. So it's a good thing I went headset tonight. You know, instead of doing the phone, I was finally back on the headset here again because the baseball game was pretty much over by the time the show started. It was a blowout. So I was like, you know, I might as well do the headset tonight because this way at least I have the mute button, which is so much easier than doing it with the phone, trying to keep that phone in my hand and hitting the mute button. But that mute button's come in handy tonight.
Now, you're up there in Wisconsin where whatever you catch is going to tend to linger because it's so much colder than most other parts of the country.
We've had a really warm October. I mean, we had a few days where it felt like winter was starting to... Okay, here it comes, and then we're back in the 60s again.
Right.
You know, but it's not gonna last forever. I know that. I mean, we're getting into the Halloween period and getting into early November is right around when the snow starts to fly. So, yeah, makes me excited.
And meanwhile, down here in the Mid-South, my wife is still cranking up the air every night before bed. And I'm like, oh, my God, really? It's not summer. You don't have to do that. But she gets warm, so it's still warm down here. Still in the 80s. So.
That is
warm. We gotta deal with that.
We'd have the air on if it was in the 80s here.
It's not in the 80s at night. It's in the 80s during the day. It's in the 60s at night.
Well, no, it's 60s here in the day. It's 40s at night.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And so yeah, you're gonna be catching stuff, and
we had a couple frosts. We did have a couple of days there a week and a half ago where I had to go out and scrape ice off my car.
Oh my God, no! Yeah. That has not happened here at all, and will not be happening for quite a while.
Yeah, we had a couple weeks that got into the upper 20s, and then it warmed up pretty quick after that. So that it sort of become, you know, it goes into that Indian summer mode. If you remember Indian summer back from Chicago.
I vaguely remember it.
Oh,
I haven't been gone that long.
I'm sorry. I mean Native Summer.
That's right. Get it right. Come on now.
Yeah. Got the so racist.
Pipeline and taking stuff from their burial grounds and stuff. We're just crapping all over the Native Americans all over again. And don't even get me started on Chief Wahoo in the World Series and all that. That's a whole other topic altogether. All right. Before we really get in trouble, he's Jay. I'm Dre. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. And Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Central Time, 10 p.m. Eastern, we are scheduled, but things can change, as you already know. If you've been following our time schedules and different changes, things can change because life happens. But scheduled for 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, Tuesday night to recap what looks like a pretty interesting week of games, week 8 in the NFL. We'll be doing our recap show for that on Tuesday night. So we will talk to you then. Thanks for listening.